Cricket on the Brain 24/7, 365. Well, every Monday, Corbin Middlemass and ex-test opener Ed Cowan join forces on the ABC Cricket Podcast.
And I watch him bat and I think it's like Brian Lara on steroids.
Featuring the best analysis and biggest results.
We're not better off trying to blood someone else in a series like this.
And the stories that have your cricket thread popping off.
So if I'm buying the Renegades, why would I want to purchase that?
ABC Cricket Podcast, every Monday on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. Because there's no off-season in cricket.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
And there ends a World Cup classic. England knock out the co-hosts in their own back garden. Mexico are out of the World Cup as England go through to the quarterfinals.
England at Estadio Azteca keeping their dream of bringing football home alive. This match had everything. Five goals, a red card, penalties, and a passionate Mexican crowd. But it was England who progressed. We unpack a World Cup classic. In the other match today, the Viking Erling Haaland rode his team of Norwegians into the next round for a matchup with England, plus a controversial red card suspension for Team USA. Was there a potential presidential pardon? I'm Poppy Penny, and this is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special. George Sims writes for The Observer and has been living the dream all over the Americas following the English football team as they seek to bring football home. George, you are at the Estadio Azteca today for this match. People are saying it was one of the best World Cup games ever. Even Thomas Tuchel was swept up in the craziness. Take us there. What was the atmosphere like in Mexico City?
I have never experienced anything like it at a sporting event or anything else. The sheer noise that the Mexican fans were able to create was extraordinary. They had a decibelometer before the game. The hype man said, we want to make this the loudest place on earth. And the decibelometer said it was 149 decibels, which is enough if you look it up to make your ears bleed on impact to genuinely deafen you. The national anthem was one of the most extraordinary things I've ever watched, and that sound just didn't stop until, you know, the 103rd minute it ended up at, when the whole place just emptied with this real tangible sense of how is this thing that felt like it never was never going to end, in the sense of both Mexico's campaign and that game itself.
The match itself, I don't even know where to start. Every minute felt like the 90th minute. It had everything. There was five goals. There was penalties. There was a red card. I mean, what happened tonight at the Azteca?
I wish I could remember every little thing that happened, and I hope one day I do. But it sort of happened gradually and then all at once. I think it was a big thing for England to sort of start and not let Mexico start as it against Ecuador just all over them. And they didn't. I mean, yes, you have Declan Rice getting booked in the first minute for booting a Mexican player in the head, which didn't feel like the perfect start. But it did settle from there. And you got to the fabled 20-minute mark without a goal, and then half an hour. And then Jude Bellingham happens. And you know, this was sort of exhibition of total Bellingham from start to finish.
Bellingham, England coming again. It's Harry Kane and Bellingham again! 2 in 2 minutes for England, who are in Mexican dreamland!
He was everywhere. I mean, two goals in 98 seconds to completely define this game, but also a game-saving clearance just before half-time when it really looked like Mexico were going to come back into it and equalise. This was all Jude Bellingham. Mexico were resilient and excellent, but still couldn't really find a way through a game that will just defy definition or anything clear from it.
A lot of the conversation around this England side is that it's been Jude Bellingham, Harry Kane or bust, and they were England's goal scorers in this match, and Jude Bellingham, as you touch on, was phenomenal. Did you see anything that tells you that this side has more threats, or do you think the ones that they already have are going to be enough to get England further significantly in this tournament?
I think both Bellingham and Kane are in and of themselves probably enough. I mean, two of quite possibly five, if not 10 best players in the world at the moment, and both players that grow into moments and grow into these spaces and opportunities. But also, I was really pleased to see Bukayo Saka get his third assist of the World Cup, even if it never really feels like he's quite got into it. He really brought something Nani Madueke has not been able to here. And this was also Anthony Gordon's best game in an England shirt, certainly in a game of this size. He was sort of just relentlessly excellent from start to finish, won the winning penalty, and was even there defending right at the back, right to the bitter end. And so it felt like the first game that a full attack has started to form that you can see sort of working toward the end of the tournament, working in semi-finals and finals, but also that Bellingham and Kane proved that, as always, they are probably just enough on their own.
There was a red card that left England down to 10 men early in the second half, and it was sort of shades of Beckham v Argentina in 1998. How impressive were the England backs, given Mexico had significantly more of the ball and more than three times the amount of shots on goal?
It was a defensive performance I don't think we've really seen from an England side before. Not certainly that I can think of that quality and resilience for that period of time. I mean, Tuchel's decision to bring on Dan Burn and Jed Spence on 75 minutes was him saying, we're either winning this game in 90 minutes or not at all. But if Mexico had equalised, the team would have then been so unbalanced and so short on ideas of where to go next that it felt like that might have been the end. And so he sort of committed and said, I am, parking the burn, for want of a better phrase. And that's exactly what he did. I mean, Dan Burn ended with six clearances, two blocked shots for someone who I think me and plenty of other people have questioned why he was here at all. This was the Dan Burn moment. It works perfectly. Jed Spence was also brilliant on that left-hand side as a one-on-one defender, using his speed and strength. It really showed something from an England team that I'm just not sure any of us have seen before.
For Mexico, their dream tournament as hosts and getting through to the knockouts comes to an end. How have you seen their tournament? I imagine you're still in Mexico City. I imagine that nation is still incredibly proud of this team.
Oh, absolutely. I think they appreciate just as much as England do that they have been part of one of the great World Cup occasions and a brilliant run to this point. I mean, that they came into this game without conceding a goal, with having that incredible win over Ecuador last week that was so sort of relentless and fizzing from start to finish, that they are incredibly proud. I mean, I know how hopeful they've been. They've had this slogan that sort of developed throughout the tournament, ECC, which literally means sort of what if yes, but really like what if it's this time? What if, this thing that you've always dreamed of is going to happen? And there has been a real hope that this team is capable of going a long way, despite the fact that pre-tournament they weren't particularly fancied. They weren't seen as one of the great Mexican sides, but they've really come together to create something bigger and better than themselves. They really could have won this game. There will be plenty of people who believe maybe they should have won it. And then they would have gone on to a quarter final in Miami against Norway that England are now going to have. But they also would have believed that they had a pretty good shot at winning.
Before I let you go, you mentioned that quarterfinal in Miami against Norway. How far do you think England can go in this tournament? What will the come down be like from this game, which was one of the greats? Can they, get their heads back in the game in time for that match against Norway?
Yeah, I think it's going to take some time to completely balance and be able to look forward to the future. But we've all been waiting for Thomas Tuchel's England to tell us what they really are. And I think this was here. This was saying we are both mentally and physically resilient, but also technically excellent. We can come together. And as Tuchel has maintained throughout, with sort of little evidence up to this point, become bigger in the bigger moments. And as I said, we've seen sort of Kane and Bellingham and Saka and Gordon sort of work as this brilliant attacking unit that I really do think can rival Michael Olise and Kylian Mbappe and Desiree Doué and Ousmane Dembele for France, which puts them among the best teams at the tournament. I think they're probably now second favourites. I think they are favourites on their side of their draw to reach the final over an Argentina side that just managed to get past Cape Verde the other day, and that seem, for all the messiness of it all, a bit ageing and disjointed in a way that England now won't be after this incredibly unifying moment.
George Sims, thanks so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of the tournament, and I hope the high from this lasts.
No problem.
Amanda Shalala is in the US covering the World Cup for the ABC. And Amanda, today you watched the Viking, Erling Haaland, do his thing and take the Norwegians to the next round with a win over Brazil at the World Cup. Can you try and put into words how impressive this guy is?
Poppy, for most of the match, Haaland had been really well contained. He barely had any touches. In fact, he only ended up having 3 touches in Brazil's box for the entire match. But that doesn't matter when he can manufacture 2 goals like that. I thought Norway played a very patient game. I was impressed with the Norwegians. They really controlled possession. They dominated possession throughout the entire game without really threatening to penetrate the box until it was starting to get a bit late in the game. The Brazilians were brilliant on the counter-attack, but had no real finishing in the box, whereas you could sense that the Norwegians were just waiting for their moment, waiting for that time to unleash this man who is unbelievable to watch, one of the most prolific strikers in the world, a superstar of men's football who has lived up to all the hype, to all the expectation at this World Cup so far. And he did it again today. The first goal in the 79th minute, a fantastic header, just rising above this big, brilliant Viking king to put Norway in front. And then about 10 minutes later, a superb low drive.
Haaland! Oh, wonderful! He has nailed it for Norway! Their greatest day! Their mightiest hero! And Brazil are broken!
That's all he needs. You just give Haaland a tiny, tiny little window of opportunity and he will just smash it open. And he has done incredible things for the Norwegians so far this tournament. I think quarterfinals was always a realistic expectation for them with the generational talent they have. But now it's a question of how far can they go? Could they dare to dream?
There is something really joyous about watching Haaland do his thing. He's, you know, got his YouTube videos where he's getting out and about in Texas and he's banging the drum for the now iconic row that the Norwegian fans are doing. They now play England, we know that, in Miami. How far can, I guess, his joy and obscene goal-scoring ability take the Norwegians? Do you think it's realistic that they move on in the next round?
I think it's going to be incredibly tough against the 3 Lions, who had a phenomenal result against Mexico. But when Haaland and when Norway are in form, they are up there amongst the elite talent that we've seen at this World Cup so far. This tournament has really been shaped by those global superstars, the ones who earn many, many millions of dollars, but who have been proving their worth. And he is up there with Messi, with Mbappe, with Kane in doing that for his team and being the driving force. So I think if they keep on doing what they've been doing, they're very well organized team, they're very smart tactically, they know how to get it to Haaland in the moments that matter, they could create a lot of headaches for England. The 3 Lions will have a lot to say about that, and I do think they still deserve to have that title is one of the favourites, maybe in that second tier behind France, who seems to be a runaway train at the moment. But this is going to be an enthralling matchup. And I think if people haven't already gotten on the Norway bandwagon, they should be getting on it now because they have been brilliant to watch.
On the other side of the outcome is Brazil. This is their worst World Cup result since 1990. So what is the fallout for the 5-time champions, Amanda?
They brought in one of the great managers in world football, Carlo Ancelotti, about a year ago, hoping he would be the great saviour for them. It just wasn't enough time for him. And some of his decisions have been questioned throughout and now will be more so, particularly turning to some of his ageing stars, the likes of Casemiro and Neymar. For Brazil, while it is a shock to see the team that has won the most men's World Cup titles, 5, crash out at this stage, I would say it's not entirely surprising. The Brazilians haven't been a real force in terms of contending for a World Cup title for a very, very long time. The last one of the five came in 2002. Yes, they've been consistent in making it to the quarterfinals, but you've never thought, okay, they're going to go on with it and win it and get a sixth title. So I think it is really time to clear the decks now. They have to look to the next generation and they have to make a lot of changes if they are going to reclaim their status as a one-time heavyweight of men's football. It has not really been that way for a while.
The other big story, Amanda, to come out of today is coming from Team USA. Fuleran Balogun received a red card against Bosnia and Herzegovina in their round of 32 match. Typically, and football fans would know, that that means you're out for the next match. Why am I now reading that he will be available for their round of 16 match against Belgium? How has this happened?
A lot of people are asking that question, Poppy. This is quite an extraordinary turn of events that we've had at the World Cup today. So yes, typically you're sitting out the next game, and FIFA said many times in the aftermath, or had confirmed, that it cannot be appealed. That's it. That's the decision. So there was no appeal. Instead, FIFA made its own decision to suspend the ban. So it's not wiping out the red card completely or wiping out the ban. They're just saying he needs to be a good boy for the next year and he'll be fine. Then we'll forget about it, but he's free to play in this round of 16 game against Belgium. There is a provision in FIFA's laws, it's Article 27, which says they can do that under their discretion. They can make these decisions. We saw it famously at the end of last year when FIFA decided to defer the final two games of a three-match ban that was handed to Cristiano Ronaldo, which then meant he would be free to play in the opening group games of this World Cup. It's not without precedent, but it is pretty unbelievable to see that it has happened in this way. The Belgian Football Association is extremely unhappy about it. They've said they're astonished by the decision. The Americans, understandably, are very happy. Balogun is a key player for them. We hear a lot about Christian Pulisic, but Balogun is just as crucial for them, and he has been in prolific goal-scoring form, so that is a huge boost for them.
I want to know why there is talk that Donald Trump is somehow involved in this. He has been largely absent from this tournament. I think we were expecting to see a lot more of him at games, sitting with Gianni Infantino, who they did a lot of press ahead of this tournament together, but we haven't really seen much of it. There's reports that Trump made a call here. What's going on?
So we have seen Donald Trump put a post out on his social media platform. He said, "Thank you to FIFA for doing what was right and reversing a great injustice." And then there have been reports coming out saying that apparently Trump made several calls to President, FIFA President Gianni Infantino, to ask him to intervene and to try and get this decision overturned so Balogun could play. These are unconfirmed reports at this stage, with the White House and FIFA declining to comment at this stage. We know FIFA always says it wants to be apolitical. Infantino has said that so many times. We don't want to mix politics. And yet he gave Donald Trump the Peace Prize, the much maligned Peace Prize late last year, calls Trump a friend. He says, yes, we are friends, and now we are hearing this. So there will be many, many more questions around this. Very controversial, if it does come to be confirmed, to have this sort of political intervention.
Coach of Team USA, Mauricio Pochettino, spoke today.
We were punished enough against Bosnia-Herzegovina to play with 10 men. 30 minutes in a decision that was complete unfair.
What has the reaction been? You mentioned the Belgian team is upset with this and Team USA are pleased, but what about, I guess, fans and neutrals and the media? What's the reaction been?
I think from many of the American fans that maybe don't have an intricate knowledge or passion for football, they're just thinking, yeah, great, okay, this is awesome. They don't really understand how unprecedented this is. Balogun did post on his own socials as well with a picture of him with US fans and the Michael Jackson song Bad playing in the background. So that was an interesting take from him. I would say from the invested football-loving public and pundits, everyone is gobsmacked, really. particularly after Ronaldo, you thought, okay, well, that is a big, big call. And then to see it happen again in a short space of time. But just to have that added element of this alleged interference from the president of the country where the tournament is being co-hosted and involving that country, it's really hard to fathom.
Amanda Shalala, there is always drama when it comes to a FIFA World Cup, and we appreciate you walking us through it. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Poppy.
Headlines. Some of the Socceroos have started returning home from the World Cup, including keeper and arguably Australia's newest cult hero, Patrick Beach. He was stopped at the airport and asked about the surprise change that coach Tony Popovich made, putting captain Matt Ryan in goal for the penalty shootout.
I mean, I definitely enjoy it more on the field, but you know, like I said, if I had to get if the call was made from the boss and I had to sit on the sidelines and support the boys that way and do my part from the sidelines, then I was happy to do it that way.
That's some good towing the party line from Beach. I'm Poppy Penny and this is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special, produced by Declan Byrne. Thanks to SBS for the extra audio used in this episode.